Hello, fellow travelers, and welcome to the Good Fight Podcast. This is Brian Holm, welcoming you to Season 4, Episode 2, and calling it, Is There a War On? So we want to explore that today. Glad that you're here with us. If you missed last week, you might want to go back and look at some of that stuff, those resources, but we're kind of building on these things week by week now. So I want to greet you on behalf of my podcast partner, Denver Ekman, who is in his student teaching in Utah, Southern Utah University. He sends his regard and is kind of helping with the production and the final preparation of this for going out on the podcast platform. So I want to thank him for that. And I know he misses being here with us. Last time I tried to lay out my case for the necessity of freedom and truth-loving people like us to speak out. Today, I want to go further with that and illustrate some of why this is an urgent thing at this point and try to explore that case for is there a war on or not? So speaking out about it and try to describe the nature of the war that we do find ourselves in. Now, the question of the day, is there a war on? A lot of people are going to say no. The people are comfortable. There's too much extremism and hate out there, too much harsh dialogue. I'm still doing pretty well. Things like that. And maybe you've had some of your family and friends express that to you. I know I've got some family and acquaintances that just don't want to talk about it. They're too comfortable in what they're doing and don't want to kind of be confused by it. And yet digging down, not below the surface, is some concern and even some terror on their parts too, I believe. But today I want to make the case for yes, that there is a war on, and to try to describe that kind of what kind of war it is and some ways to illustrate that from history. So that's what I'm going to be looking at. So let's kind of dig right in. I want to begin today with a quote that I ended with last week, or maybe I just put it in the notes and didn't actually say it. But Dr. Jeff Myers was on a podcast by Elisa Childers. I know it was one of the resources from last week. But here's what he describes as the actual nature of the battle, what we are actually fighting about. So here's his quote. We do face a battle in our time, but it's not a battle of Republicans versus Democrats, or conservatives versus liberals, or red states versus blue states, or even the religious right versus the non-religious. It's literally a battle over truth. Does capital T truth exist in a way that can be known by us? Or are we only stuck with small t truths, plural, that we socially construct for ourselves? If it's the latter, and the majority of the people in the United States of America are now convinced that it is, I see very little hope for our future. If we understand, on the other hand, that the capital T truth does exist and that we can discover it through reason and revelation in Scripture, we can understand reality in a way that truly promotes human flourishing. So I really love that. So he says that in spite of all of the different battle fronts there are, the basic battle is over. Is there absolute truth or not? And how are we going to discern that and discover it? Now, looking at that battle, if indeed it is a battle, so it's a battlefield in minds and institutions and a battle of ideas. So instead of Gettysburg, Bunker Hill, Guadalcanal, or Waterloo, the battlefields are schools, colleges, courts, governments, families, and the like. Subjects like truth, marriage, gender, worldview, are all part of the ideas that they're battling about. But even there, it involves whether there is any objective truth or not and how we can know it and what do we do about it. Now, downstream from this kind of ideological battle, it overflows into what's going on in the cities, the chaos in our big cities, at the border, etc. And so, as Dr. Meyer said, it's a battle about the nature of truth itself. So now in the Bible, Isaiah makes it clear what's happening, that some people are trying to call evil good and good evil. They're trying to call darkness light and like darkness. And they're trying to call bitter sweet and sweet bitter. That's from Isaiah 5:20. Now, I'm guessing most of our readers and listeners would agree that there's definitely something amiss out there. looking at the polls right now, it seems like a majority of Americans have very serious concerns about the porous border, weak economy, expensive energy and expensive everything, failing schools, the sexualization of our children, divided families, things like that. Now, while they may be concerned, many don't either have the moral and spiritual foundation to be able to say why those things are wrong, and so they're afraid to kind of speak out, or many are unable to figure out what to actually do about it. So there's a why issue and there's a what issue. So we're going to try to address some of those things today and then in some of our future episodes going forth. So to illustrate today's point, I'm going to use materials from two individuals who use the historical example of the Nazi takeover in Germany in just over 5 years. That was back in the 1930s. Now, before you tune me out, let me say that I understand this example can be overused, but I really think that there's something that we should all listen to here. So please try to hang in there with me. Try to see what I'm getting at and find at least one thing that maybe you can resonate with and take away. Now, I also realize that the names Glenn Beck and Eric Metaxas will have varying degrees, varying kinds of response to some of our leaders. In another episode, I'm going to talk about how we can deal with people with whom we agree with on a lot of stuff, but that we don't have to agree with on everything. So at least in these ideas, try to listen to what I have to say or my reporting on what they said, and also try to listen to them in their own words, that primary source, so to speak, and make sure you're hearing them in their own voice. So here's their ideas in a nutshell. Glenn Beck, in the example that I give today, was making a speech at a conference for Christian legislators. So he was saying now that he reminds us that in 1932, when Hitler came to power, the German people had many of the same freedoms that we do, okay, and some that we're now fighting for, but the German people were in kind of the same boat. Now, the majority of the German people had no idea what was in store for them and how quickly it would go away. So that's just kind of like us today, that they couldn't even fathom back then that their leaders would lead them so far astray, because there had been some cultural boundaries there, some lines beyond which people would not dare even go. And so when people started actually going there, they couldn't believe it. And people think, oh, it'll surely correct itself and go back the other way. But as we can see, things turned out very differently. Secondly, in the 1930s in Germany, there were people like Dietrich Bonhoeffer who started speaking out very early about this. They were kind of the prophets or whatever that realized what was going on and tried to speak out about it, but they were largely dismissed as kooks and extremists in the larger culture. Now, there was a time in Germany when Hitler could have been easily put down, but there were so many who were too comfortable, too scared, or too unaware to speak out until it was too late. So one of Glenn Beck's points is that in these kinds of things, and we can look at that, we can also look at the examples of Russia in the Bolshevik time, or China in the things leading up to the Maoist revolution, that there were times when that could have gone away with an organized, concerted effort. But there is also a tipping point where that becomes much more difficult, and then for that particular time becomes impossible. So a good example, you may have heard the quote by German pastor Martin Niemöller, who, and I'm paraphrasing here, he said that first the Nazis came for the socialists, then they came for the trade unionists, then they came for the Jews, and he didn't speak out for any of them because he wasn't part of those groups. But then they came for him. When they came for him, there was no one left to speak out in his behalf. Okay, very chilling words in retrospect, and I would love not to have to say that about my own response in these things. So now, instead of the socialists and trade unionists and things like it was in the 30s, here are some of the groups today that it seems like we have been ostracized and vilified in many ways unfairly. So how about people that are associated with Donald Trump? Donald Trump himself, January Sixers, conservative journalists, parents at school board meetings, the so-called MAGA Republicans or Christian nationalists. Now, if you're not aware that some of these groups are being unfairly targeted and vilified right now, please keep reading and listening. Now, we can always say another disclaimer that not everyone in these groups you're going to agree with or need to be agreed with. And yet, I think if we objectively look, that groups like this, expressing these particular things, seem to be being unfairly targeted. The last point that Beck makes is that that it seems like we in America are very far along in that process. And it's very late in the game where we can still speak out and make a difference, but it's becoming more and more difficult. And he says that if the current course continues and the same party, political party in the United States continues to stay in power, it doesn't seem like that window will be open much longer. And yeah, I realize that the idea of that happening here in the U.S. is just as unthinkable to us today as it was to most Germans in 1932. Yet there's a lot of evidence that we are on that road. And I'm just asking, are you willing to consider that this is possible? And yes, it is theoretically possible that that could happen here. We are not immune from this, just like Germany was not immune to that back in the 30s, as much as they thought they might have been at one point. Now, the example of Germany is so insightful because it happened so quickly in so short a period of time, less than 10 years. So if the German example seems a little dramatic for you, the same thing happened in Russia and the same thing happened in China. It was the same process. It just took a little bit longer. What was the result? Governments killed around 100 million of their own people. The death toll in Germany was minuscule compared to that in Russia and China. And so we have to realize it's basically the same set of ideas. That the enemy is our enemy that's both spiritually and ideologically. It's the same spiritual enemy, whether no matter what country or what particular form it's taking or what it's calling itself. But that enemy is relentless. Okay, they're going to complain. They're going to push. They're going to lie. They're going to accuse other people of what they're doing. Dissent of any kind is not going to be tolerated. Those who speak out must be eliminated one way or the other. Okay, and thankfully, in our country right now, the physical elimination may not be happening, at least to any great extent, but the social media censorship, the unfair targeting of political opponents and things like that, I think is certainly happening more on one side than the other. Okay, now let's go to Eric Metaxas. He specifically talks about the church's role. Now, he asserts that we in the U.S. are now in the third existential crisis of our nation. Now, that's kind of a cliche I'm a little tired of, but what he says is that the first one was at the nation's birth in 1776. The second one was the Civil War in the 1860s. And that was a very interesting ideological battle that was there, where slavery was one of the main outpourings of that. But the ideas behind that were much deeper and more pervasive. And then we have right now, where, like Dr. Myers said earlier, it's the battle of truth against not truth. Okay, so Metaxas says that in the 30s, the German church was quite strong and quite united, but they ended up dividing into three groups. That those who recognized the Nazi menace and wanted to warn about it, like Dietrich Bonhoeffer, they formed what was called the Confessing Church. Those who were kind of ambivalent about it and thought, oh, what's the big deal? I'm just kind of going to go along to get along or agree to disagree. And then those who kind of saddled up right away with the Nazis and tried to seek favor by trying to kind of meld and blend things in. They were trying to be the cool kids, in other words. So as the heat increased with the Nazi ideas filtering farther and farther down into the culture, the Confessing Church shrank. But it strengthened while the latter group grew, the people wanting to be the cool kids. So according to Metaxas, basically more than 12,000 of the 18,000 pastors did not speak out with any kind of clarity while they had the chance. Okay, and then their chance was gone. So he says there, just like now, there's very little middle ground. Now, I think it's really good for us to discuss different ideas and nuances and things, but the thing I'm coming to the conclusion is that there are two sides. There are two parties. There is either absolute truth or there's not. Now, we can discuss those things back and forth, but I think we need to be clear that we, I'm recording this on Super Tuesday, and we've got the November election coming up. That those two sides, I feel, are very clearly represented in the two parties or candidates, main ones that we're going to have to vote for. So he asserts that the contrast is stark and there really isn't any middle ground. He says the devil owns the middle or the devil owns the fence. So being on the fence, because the prevailing wind of the culture is in the opposite direction, if you're on the fence, you're going to likely be pulled along with that prevailing wind. So he encourages churches and pastors to consider this, and I largely agree. That choice seems pretty stark, even in that goodness, good versus evil, sweet versus bitter, light versus darkness. Now, we have our individual differences, and I have no doubt that there are some people that sincerely think that voting for the other side is the best way to go. And so I'm just trying to have dialogue. It's very clear to me, and I think we can make a really good case, but we have to be, especially with fellow Christian believers, we have to be very open. We want to have unity as much as possible, but I think we should be clear about which of those two sides we fall under, because they're mutually exclusive in that way. So please consider these resources, Eric Metaxas' Letter to the American Church. He lays out his arguments, available in book or documentary form. And then Glenn Beck's speech that I've got the link down for. But they both make the case that this election is very important to help shore up some of these eroding freedoms while we have the time. Now, I want to conclude with one other idea of Glenn Beck. He's asserted that back in 1932, all of this was new to Germany. But now we have their example as kind of a cautionary tale. So in some ways, there's more responsibility on our part to try to be discerning, because we know how quickly this can go back. Now, all of us tell ourselves that if we'd been back there, Germans in the 1930s, we would certainly have recognized this for what it was and would have spoken out against it. Just like in the 1860s with slavery, we certainly would have been on the side of being for the abolitionist cause. But Glenn Beck says something very interesting that I've been chewing on. He suggests that If you really want to know how you would have responded back in the 1930s, look at yourself, look at how you're responding now. Now, that question assumes a lot of things, that there really truly is that menace going on. But if you think about it, we can look around and see all the players. Okay. And so I would just encourage you, if you're a little discouraged at people, maybe even people like me speaking out the way I am, or other outspoken people, think about what they're saying and really try to consider, really pray that that God will help open your eyes to what the issues really are and help you be able to discern what your role might be. And there's a different role for everybody, and we don't all have the same voice. So I would really like for you to ponder that, and that may be my main request. Think about that. How are you responding to what arguably is this serious threat right now? All right, so today's goal was to add to last time's need to speak out in general about how dire things seem to be. And I just wanted to add the fact that seems like there's a war on. None of us want to be alarmists, but please be open to what the next step of discerning what you want to do is. And back to Dr. Meyer's ideas one more time. There's still that war of truth, and that war is truly a war indeed. Today, I want to conclude with Patrick Henry's words, who is seeking to convince his audience of some of these same things. And someday I'd like to kind of adapt these words to maybe some of our particular culture issues, but really listen to what he has to say. So he says, "Besides, sir, we shall not fight our battles alone. There's a just God who presides over the destinies of nations and who will rise up friends to fight our battles for us. The battle serves not to the strong alone, it's to the vigilant, the active, the brave. Besides, sir, we have no election. If we were base enough to desire it, it's now too late to retire from the contest. There is no retreat but in submission and slavery. Our chains are forged. Their clanking may be heard on the plains of Boston. The war is inevitable, and let it come. I repeat, sir, let it come. It's vain, sir, to extenuate the matter. Gentlemen may cry peace, peace, but there is no peace. The war is actually begun. The next gale that sweeps from the north will bring to our ears the clash of resounding arms. Our brethren are already in the field. Why stand we here idle? What is it that gentlemen wish? What would they have? Is life so dear or peace so sweet as to be purchased at the price of chains and slavery? Forbid it, Almighty God. I know not what course others may take, but as for me, give me liberty or give me death. End of that quote. Now, certainly we need to adapt that to our time, and there are lots of ways that we can respond. Please study the resources, study the links that are there, and apply it to the enemy that's facing us today, and praise God that it's not yet a physical battle, and I pray that it will never be one. So let's keep up the good fight. Next time, I want to look at some practical ways that we can figure out what might be our role. I'm looking forward to sharing with you how God's really been working in my life in the last couple of months to help me answer that question that's been really on my mind and heart. So please email at goodfight71@gmail.com. Share it with others. Let us know how we can help. Thank you for your prayers and for your support. God bless you. And let's all find our place in the good fight and keep it up. Goodbye. Thank you.